Nation with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 155. I'm Adam and would you like a cup of tea? And with me this week is Mary Lang.
If I had a new paint job, I'd be feeling pretty swishy, too, if I looked like you.
Rhys Parton.
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry, wrong Churchill.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I can remember things, so many things. The last war, the squalor in the mud, and the awful, awful misery of it all. What about that? What am I?
A podcaster. And Robert Haynes.
I am your soldier.
Yes, I know. Right, here we are on a Sunday. I think it's Sunday. Is it Sunday everywhere?
No, it's Monday.
No. It's Monday now, is it? Oh, good
grief. It's the future. Ask them about the flying cars.
Yeah, clearly.
I've
lost a connector in regards to my sound effect box.
Painful.
Which means, of course, I will have to dub on sound effects afterwards, which is a bit of a shame, really.
How did you lose a connector?
Well, I don't know. I put it in the drawer, but I've got two connectors. One's sort of gold-plated, and that works lovely, and it's a splitter thing. And the other one's not gold-plated, and it makes crackling noises, and it's what I used to use on the old Hoovy and Anorak podcast when I used to split the audio. If it makes
crackling noises, it probably used to belong to Robert.
Yeah. Good point. I can't do that. I have to do it afterwards and hopefully find it by next week. And if I don't find it by next week, I hope to have another piece of kit similar to the other splitters I have, which work much better. I'm rambling. Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, where we will now be talking about Victory of the Daleks, which is a Doctor Who story written by Mark Gatiss. And it goes thus. Right then, we begin the episode in a very well sort of constructed sort of war room, which is...
It doesn't look at all like the war rooms. If you look at the... Confidential...
Yeah.
If you say so. Well, I think it does. I felt it was a very accurate rendition of the war room.
And I thought the props they were using looked wonderful too.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Dalek props.
Eh?
No, stuff like the phones and the other communication devices, I thought they looked appropriate. Oh, yes.
And the signs on the walls, everything, yeah.
It looks really good. But it doesn't look anything like the real war.
Anyway,
they're losing the war.
And Ian McNeese is slightly different than what Churchill.
Never mind.
But he's
never
close enough for me.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, yeah, they're losing the war, so we see a little model Dalek shoved along the sort of map, which I wonder how much that Dalek would fetch on eBay if it were available. Even though it's not a particularly brilliant rendition of it.
During the Proms concert, they had those stuck on the floor in front of the orchestra during the section where they were playing the music for this episode.
I didn't remember that. Cool. Meanwhile, the Doctor steps out of the TARDIS with loads of guns pointed at him, and then Churchill sort of comes through and... was he get called Darling or something? I can't remember.
That was on the phone last episode, I think.
Oh, was it? And, of course, this is at this point that the Doctor...
For God's sake...
Nice picnic,
Robert.
Can you do it away from the microphone, or I shall set the dogs onto you?
It's for effect.
No, it's not. So the Doctor goes quite a lot at this stage.
He does.
Next series.
Mark Gatiss wrote this with the idea of a generic Doctor because he started writing it before they had cast Matt Smith.
Okay.
And I wondered because both Matt Smith and Karen Gillan look younger in this one even than they do in the previous two. So I wondered which one they had recorded first.
I'm not quite sure, but I don't think a few months would make that much difference.
I know the next two episodes are actually their first ever recorded, so this might be next. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
could be. Meanwhile, also the outfit, the outfit that Karen Gillan is wearing for this is the same as the little figure I have up on my little thing, and I've got her sort of leaning provocatively inside the TARDIS. Yeah, you can pose these figures. And she's I might take a picture of it and post it on Facebook. But basically, she's
so the provocative poses you're doing, is it, Adam?
As far as my little figures go, yes, I made it, created a
quite a little figures out of this
provocative pose for Amy.
Yes.
In fact, I could. Oh, I just knocked my microphone, but I could go and take a picture of it now and see if I can post it on Facebook now. Bear with me just a minute. This is live sort of stuff.
Careful of the bear.
Try not to tread on the dog.
Youporn.com.
Magic, move yourself. Right, here we go. Where's my phone?
Oh, dear.
You know, we can do anything, and he yells at us, but when he wants to go do something, we all have to sit here.
Yep.
And he loves the chocolate bar.
Do it now while he's away. He'll probably edit this bit out. Although, now that I've said that, he won't, to make me look stupid.
Pringles.
Of course.
Pringles.
Of course.
I've got my Pringles.
You've got Pringles? Yeah. I'm so sorry. That's painful.
Hello.
Who is this?
That was my oldest daughter who turned 19 today.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear
Louisa!
Happy birthday!
Julia?
No, Louisa.
Louisa.
Louisa, hello.
Hello, Louisa.
Stop saying my name.
Hello, Louisa.
Louisa. Say my name, people will hear.
Say my name, say my name.
Adam.
Yes?
Adam, just say your name now.
What, Louisa?
Say my name, say my name.
It's Louisa's birthday.
Is it? Aww. Yeah. Anyway, I was going to send a picture, wasn't I?
The site that they used for the war rooms was really, it's, the building is still in its 1950s condition, although the original roof has been covered. I'm not sure what AAOR stands for. It's,
neither do I.
That was a say my name. Of the watching machine.
Adam,
yes.
Adam,
I'm sure that was riveting for the audience.
It was indeed. Right, I was going to send a photo, wasn't I? Wasn't I, Louisa?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I was.
Now there's going to be like stalkers.
Don't be contrary. You're nearly a 20-year-old now.
Yeah.
Uh oh.
Mm. Right then, I'm going to put this picture on the Facebook group if I can work out how to do it, because it involves technical stuff. Right then.
Yeah, let's see. 19, that's right on the verge of turning into a devoted to parents, loving, sweet, supportive child. Isn't that right?
Child? It's definitely not a child if you're 19.
Well, adult. You're right, adult. This is when you begin to appreciate what your parents have done for you.
And it's gone.
She's gone very quiet.
Scared her off by talking sensible.
Cool. Right then. What did I say? It was provocative, wasn't it? Provocative.
Since you stepped out, I'm going to go back to my headphones.
Provocative.
Okay. There we go.
I'm really looking forward to this provocative pose.
Well, it's not a brilliant picture. I've got to bear in mind I tried to stretch very high into the corner to take this photo. How do you spell provocative?
And who was it was worried that we would take an hour talking about Victory of the Daleks?
I got distracted. Provocative. I think that's how you spell it. Right, post. There it goes. It's off. It's there. Right. Can I continue with Doctor Who now?
Yeah. Thank you. Didn't actually have to stop to do that.
That was
you
can. Anyway, right.
Adam.
On the Facebook group, that's Facebook listeners, page. The 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. Now,
I can't just stop now.
Meanwhile, right, when Winston Churchill takes the Doctor and Amy up to the roof to show off his new defence mechanism, and loads of Stukas, I presume they're Stukas, then start heading towards them. I thought they used to sort of bomb at night. I did like the shot of the London skyline with all the decoy sort of balloon thing.
Yes, yeah.
Did remind me a little bit of the Empty Child Doctor Dances, but a daylight version of it. Yeah. You were going to say something then, weren't you, Kirby?
Yeah.
I like a lot of the beginning of this story.
Yeah.
I just wish that they had been able to follow up with the rest of it.
No, steady on. We're not there yet.
No.
Right.
Can I also, while he was taking Amy and Rory up to the roof, he tells them about the Nazi menace. He just couldn't pronounce it very well.
Now, I'll just say about the picture I posted on Facebook, it was taken with my phone. And of course, it was quite dark in that corner, hence it being quite fuzzy. So please bear that in mind. It's not supposed to be an arty-farty. It's a bit fuzzy.
Yeah.
But you can more or less see the provocative pose, and also the fact that Amy is wearing the same costume she's got in this episode. Do you like the Rory with his blue sort of life preserver type thing? And actually, you can see all the dust on top of the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th Doctors.
You need to dust occasionally.
I think that needs a bit of a dusting, but it is quite high up in the corner. You can also see the Master's feet in the top right-hand corner in front of one of the Teletubby Daleks. Poe, I think that was it.
Just his feet?
Poe the Teletubby Dalek.
He's only missing his head.
Excellent.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, right, so... Yeah, so the Doctor, the Dalek obviously shoots these things, and then what does it do? The Doctor goes, looks a bit shocked, and the Dalek says, "I am your servant," doesn't it? Well, "I am your soldier."
Soldier.
Yeah.
Heir of the Daleks.
Yeah, all right. Just testing.
Ooh, no, you won't.
So anyway, the Doctor then has a chat with Winston Churchill and sort of.
Well, he has a chat with the Dalek up on the roof first.
Mm.
Yeah, only a quick chat, though.
But where he's kind of startled to see them and confused. And
Yeah.
Who's blowing on their microphone?
I like that.
I wonder. Right, everybody, see if we can guess who's blowing on their microphone. Anyway, right, so... Yeah, so the Doctor has a chat with Winston Churchill, saying basically that they're aliens, they're Daleks, and they're not made by Professor.
Right.
Yeah, let me get the sentence out. I had actually formed the B in my mouth. It's like. Anyway, yeah, brace.
Form Professor, I heard.
No, Professor. And then I just stuttered, and he went, never mind. And then the Doctor then realises that Amy doesn't remember the Daleks. And thinks that's a bit strange.
Well, missed quite a wonderful scene where, whilst he's talking to him, the Dalek or the Ironside sneaks up behind him, and they get so much tension out of just this inanimate object. It looks like it's spying on them.
Yeah.
It was so well done.
Well, it goes past, they keep sort of floating past, holding trays and inanimate things, and that's quite funny. Yeah. But the Doctor mentions planets in the sky as well.
That's actually something that the plunger can be used for, is holding trays.
Yeah, I like the way they had it in a funny angle.
It might be a little bit unsanitary.
Yeah, maybe so. Hmm.
Don't know where that plunger's been, yeah.
Oh, Robert.
Oh, there.
That's what she said. Anyway, so... No, that's not even worth one.
I could make my own.
So I do love the way these Daleks look with the greenness and the Union flag underneath the eyepiece and stuff like that. That's fantastic. Who's choking in the back? Do you mind not choking on my podcast?
I'm choking.
Okay, can we wait for Robert to come back from his chokingness? Do you need a Heimlich manoeuvre or a slap on the back or something?
Probably.
Well, if he wouldn't eat during this, so.
I like that they have outfitted some of the Daleks for blackout, and they've got these little cloth cups over the light.
I love that they're like a tank with equipment on there, or ammunition, or water, or something.
They do.
Little belt that they have all their little tools in.
Now, if you actually,
it's brilliant. I love the Ironside Dalek.
Yeah.
All right. So you're making a funny noise there, Robert. If you look on the picture I put on Facebook, I'm pretty sure the Dalek on the right-hand side is one of the Ironside Daleks.
Does anybody remember in the new Dalek episode of the seventh season?
I don't remember, Mary. I don't remember seeing any nude Daleks.
Yeah, what's the nude Dalek?
I wondered if anyone remembered seeing an Ironside's Dalek in there.
Is that what was that?
It's my doorbell.
Oh, right, okay.
I have to see who's at the door.
Go and see the door and say,
"Would you care for some tea?"
I've just had one, thanks.
Okay, while Mary goes to the door, it might be a good idea to drop in an advert. Welcome to the world of football mad Troy Brown, a typical 15-year-old with a loving family, a tight-knit group of friends, and a nice house in Cowes on the Isle of Wight. Materially, he has a comfortable life, but then no hormone-ridden, angst-filled teenager would ever describe their life as comfortable, and Troy was no exception. Plagued as he was, the whole world is against me complex, no girlfriend syndrome, and the pains of requited love or lust, and the usual hoard of teenage frustrations and obsessions. A privileged peek into his private, warts and all, 2003 diary reveals transformation of his boring, ordinary life as Troy tries to negotiate his many twists and turns in what was to become the most extraordinary year of his life. Fraught with family secrets, misunderstandings, dangerous liaisons, challenging adventures, shocking realities and an unexpected outcomes, interspersed with teenage insights into the state of the world, including war, crime, death and disease. As you travel with Troy on his one-year life-changing journey, you will undoubtedly laugh at the adolescent humour, cry at his misfortune, sympathise with his plights and empathise with his feelings as he works through his personal traumas and is forced to learn by his mistakes. Be warned, however, those of a sensitive disposition may also be shocked by some of the diary's content, possibly offended, but you are, after all, delving into the grimy mind of a pubescent youth. The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin by Adam Pearson. Available as a paper book or as an e-book from Amazon and iTunes. And if you're interested in the sequel, From Troy to Man, Troy Brown resumes his diary. He is 17 and he desperately wants to leave home and start his life as a bachelor. He has just been dumped by his first proper girlfriend, and not because he has accidentally cheated on her twice during their relationship. She wants to play the field. Most of his friends have moved away from the island, and life out of school proves to be quite a challenge for him. Troy is forced to grow up because of his incredible ability to make mistakes. His mistakes, as usual, are of a sexual nature, and the consequences of unprotected sex begin to appear, seemingly out of thin air. Faced with fatherhood and separation from his children, Troy's attitude to life changes forever. His main concern isn't football anymore. It is how the hell is he going to be able to be a real father to his children, and how many children has he got? Of course, his life is full of the other problems associated with day-to-day life. Will he ever find a true love? Will he ever find a job that he is truly happy in? Can he solve a murder mystery? Can he avoid being murdered himself? Will he ever be able to be a true father to his children? All of these questions are answered in this book. If you thought that being a 15-year-old virgin was enough of a rollercoaster ride for Troy, read on. This year and a half of his life may leave you needing to ingest a large dose of motion pills. From Troy to Man is available as an e-book from Amazon and from iTunes. If you're a fan of quizzes, and happened also to be a fan of the Beatles, why not buy The Beatles Quiz Book by Adam Pearson? It is available as an e-book from Amazon or from iTunes.
I'm back. Kirby may have some experience with these. Have you ever had those religious people with their Bibles and all their flyers show up at your door?
What do you mean, Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yes, Jehovah's Witnesses, yeah.
Oh,
very nice, but very sort of not really in tune with the "I'll decide what I want as my religion, thank you very much."
Yeah, right. I just set my dad on them.
Kind of pushy, you know. They like to keep asking, "Well, are you happy? Are you happy?" And it's like,
I don't understand. I don't understand people have to go around touting religion, because faith is something that's very personal to a person. Mm-hmm. And I'm not majorly religious, to be fair, but I totally respect that that side of a person's life is personal to them. And I don't understand, you know, that people want to go around saying you must.
Right.
You know.
I mean, I can't imagine someone suddenly going, "Oh yes, come in. I want to talk about this."
Some people Some people do.
Well, that must be why they're out there.
So, because obviously the other side of it, of course, is that it takes a bit of bottle to go around that to people's houses and keep on getting doors slammed in your face, and you know.
Or in in the case of my dad, getting talked to for half an hour, arguing with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are people who love to do that, too.
Who would you rather more turn up on doorstep, the local MP touting for votes or a Jehovah's Witness? At least with a local MP, you can say, you can argue with them and then say that, yeah. But with the
we've just had an election here.
Sorry, I haven't got time. Goodbye. Have you?
Yeah, so we've had all that.
Oh, you poor things.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, back to this episode of Spock to Pew. I've got where I got up to now.
Pew?
Hang on, what have we got up to? The Doctor, somewhere along the line, has had a big row. That's right, he had a big row with the Dalek. Yeah, Doctor. I'm the Doctor. And basically, after shouting and screaming at this Dalek, starts hitting it with a massive... such a large spanner that you think, what on earth would that spanner be used for? Because it's so
channeling
big.
Channeling Ace.
Yeah,
I'm just going to say, Ace, I think, was more effective with the baseball bat.
Yeah. It's a shame it didn't make the same sound effects.
I love the way they dubbed on the metal sound effect. That just made it so convincing.
Yeah. And also it made it feel that the Dalek was fairly undamageable.
Yep, not a dent.
And then the Doctor stupidly...
They didn't have him,
half a dent.
I guess
a wrench was more suited to being in that workshop, but it would have been cool if it had been a baseball bat.
Right.
Yes.
Anyway, the stupid Doctor says, "I am the Doctor, and you are the Daleks." Just to
said, he says, "I'm the Doctor, and you are the Daleks."
Yeah. Which then, of course,
please desist from striking me.
Yeah. Review testimony. I am the Doctor, and you are the Daleks. Testimony. What are you talking about? Testimony. So they transmit the testimony to the hiding. Dalek ship, which is hiding behind the moon,
outside of the moon,
which then results in the Doctor sort of as a progenitor activated. As I don't know what a progenitor is, do you know?
Progenitor.
Yeah,
and they shoot off Bracewell's hand, which is a very good effect. I love that.
Yeah,
it did that long when they did that.
Okay.
Dalek's are pretty useless. They only got his hand.
Yeah. Well, that's what they wanted to do to prove that he wasn't human.
Well, they probably
human.
Didn't want to shoot him, given what we find out about him later on.
Yes,
he's a Belm.
Yes.
It makes sense that he didn't shoot him where he is. In fact, Belm.
Of course, I wonder if these Daleks would know what it was that was in him, since they're inferior.
Well, they were part of the plan.
Yes, they were.
They helped make him, so...
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I'll tell you what, this chap, the Air Raid Warden bloke, for some reason, I don't take offence to this, but I keep thinking of you, Kirby, when I see him. It just reminds me of the picture of you that's on Facebook.
Oh!
I keep on thinking of Dad's Army.
No, this is the slightly older version, obviously. I do apologise, but no offence, mate. Oh, dear. That was nice having you on the podcast, Kirby.
sorry, we'll do it.
Yeah. So, anyway, the Doctor goes up to the Dalek ship and threatens him with what he calls a jammy dodger, which is, in fact, just a biscuit with a bit of jam in it, because jammy dodgers
are... I like jammy dodgers.
So do I.
It is a jammy dodger.
Jammy dodgers are a trademark of Burton's biscuits, so only Burton's make jammy dodgers, whereas jam rings, which is what he was actually showing the...
But we never saw the packet. We don't know who
it wasn't a jammy dodger.
Yeah.
I have jammy dodgers. Jammy dodgers have heart-shaped middles. That had a round middle. That was a jam ring.
Kirby. Oh, I had some jammy dodgers that didn't have hearts for the middle.
Well, it's about as a proper jammy dodger as, let me think of it, a Vax
Dalek.
Is a Hoover.
You know. Yeah, good statement, Reese. Yes.
What did Reese say?
I said that it's about as much a jammy dodger as the new Teletubbies are Daleks.
Yeah, and also the fact that if I buy a what are those things? A Dyson, it's not a Hoover, and it's not a Vax. It's a Dyson. A, you know what I mean?
Kirby.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm going off on one.
It's like Kirby's a vacuum cleaner. Kirby, did you see Ian's reply to about Classic series?
No, not yet. I'll check.
It's funny.
Anyway, the doctor keeps threatening them that he says that this biscuit is in fact a self-destruct thing. The Daleks, which quite rather amusingly believe him. Yeah, and then we
don't you think I'm they would have checked with the Jammy Dodgers people before they said it was a Jammy Dodger, and they would have used
or
a Jammy Dodger.
Or maybe they thought about something that I completely agree with, that it doesn't even matter.
Cool. Anyway, right. The Daleks then send some sort of beam to Earth to make...
Like Jammy Dodgers.
They can't turn the lights off, so all the lights are jammed on, so they're sending some sort of power.
Jammy Dodger on.
Look like they're doing a Death Star type of thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they're blue laser instead of a green.
At some point...
did you just fart?
No, I burped. Then I hiccuped, then I burped again.
And hiccuped.
Yeah, I am drinking Pepsi at the moment. So.
And in the shot of London, it looks like some buildings may have already been hit because they have flames coming out of the windows.
Yeah, it's a good attention to detail. At least you're watching. I wasn't. I sort of lost it a little bit at this point. Hang on.
Really?
Anyway, right.
Yes.
At some point around this time, Winston Churchill decides to deploy some... pilots of some special space-going Spitfires.
Yeah. Now
which were developed in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's the problem I have with it. I thought it was cool that they set it up at the beginning. It was cool that they set it up at the beginning, but at the end, it was done in 5 minutes and probably would have taken 3 days.
Yeah, a lot of people moan about that, don't they?
That's apart from the Teletubbies, that's the only thing I'm worried about.
Anyway,
I've got more problems with the Spitfires than the Teletubbies or the whole business with disarming Bracewell.
I've got no problem with that at all.
Meanwhile, the new Dalek paradigm.
Back at the TARDIS.
The nude Dalek.
The new Dalek. Well, let's get back to the
new Dalek. New Dalek paradigm.
We have the Teletubby Daleks about to make an entrance.
I can imagine.
Can I just say, in regards to these Daleks, when I first saw them, I thought, oh, God. But now I'm used to them. It doesn't have that much of a negative effect on me, the way they come out.
No.
Knowing, of course, that the original design sort RTD, of Daleks, the RTD ones, still exist. And all the other ones as well. So they don't bother me so much now.
Yeah, I still don't like them.
Since they didn't use them as much, I don't have as many problems with them. I was just afraid that we were getting rid of the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and in the confidential, the show producer, what's his name? Not Mark Gatiss, they went on and on about how long it took
did
them
you
to
forget,
name them.
Hang on, Mary. Did you forget that the show producer was called
Stephen Moffat.
Moment.
Have you been drinking, Mary?
Moment of the year so far on the 20
megabyte
podcast.
Now, so.
I thought you sounded quite jolly.
Speaking of nude Daleks, do you suppose there's a nude Dalek with
a camera
Manning,
looking at me?
With Katie Manning. Hang on. Draped over it.
Sorry, I'm going to have to try and switch the video on for Mary's line. No, magic does. Magic's objecting. Magic's objecting. Better not. Anyway, right.
I just got my
mustache.
There's such terrible Daleks, and yet they spend forever.
Hang on, Mary. Kirby's being pedantic about his moustache.
I know. So listen to me. Don't listen to him.
Not as gray as that.
That's why I said an older looking. Version. I did say
slightly older.
I didn't say slightly older. Oh, I might have done. I didn't mean it that way. Anyway, so Amy is meanwhile sort of trying to cheer up Bracewell by talking about girls and stuff.
Later on.
What was it? No, he's a bit miserable and she comes up to him and starts talking to him and cheers him up a little bit, doesn't he? And this is when they decide on the, to infiltrate the sort of Spitfire plan. And
infiltrate?
Sorry?
Infiltrate? That's not quite the right word.
Well, you know what I mean. What's the word?
Infiltrate.
Never mind infiltrate. What's the word should I have used? Instigate?
Instigate, that's the one.
That's the word, yes. Instigate. I said it first, so that counts.
Yeah, I mean, no. They go from the theoretical to the actual in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
It just seems so bizarre.
Yeah, but then anyway. Yeah,
I like the fact they set it up. If they came out with it like that without an explanation, then I would have gone, oh my God, what the hell is
what
that?
They should have said, what they should have said. Because I'm glossing over the fact that the new Daleks are killing the old Daleks. What are they obliterating them? Is it obliterating them or disintegrating?
Exterminating.
Them? Yeah. Disintegrating.
Exterminating them,
or
how
something
about that?
Like that.
But they didn't say exterminate before they fired.
It's a word
they'd
never come up with before.
Disintegrate, yeah, really, wasn't it? Oh, never mind. They killed them. But if they'd said in that line in regards to the Spitfires, he said, to get the plan.
I tried using them a few weeks ago or something.
Yeah, or we've had some very good. Made very good progress with it, and and that would explain it. Just one or two lines.
That would have helped. But it's like, oh well, gee, we might have this sort of technology, but I don't know.
Yeah. So,
and then bang, they're there.
And the other annoying thing, of course, and it's only slightly annoying, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show at that. The fact they're flying around space, you can hear the engines going.
Air bubbles around.
See lots of smoke as well.
Sound a bit like you've got an air bubble around them. That makes sense.
They've got an air bubble, have they?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like you.
Danny
Boy is being flown by Mark Gatiss.
Yeah, we knew that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny Boy's at the doctor. Danny Boy's at the doctor.
Yeah, but from here on, every time something is wildly impossible in Doctor Who, the catchphrase is, oh yeah, and Spitfire's in space.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, we get out to the bits where the new Daleks quickly suss out that the Doctor is actually holding a biscuit, and the Doctor then
really
eats the biscuit and said, "Yeah, he said that I was expecting a cup of tea or something, which I thought was quite good."
But I was promised tea.
That's right,
Reese. Did you ask Mary to put some clothes on? Are you getting a better view than I am? Oh, sorry. Anyway,
are you introducing a slightly illegal aspect to this podcast?
I never said about her being naked.
We're going to get that explicit tag very soon, you know.
No, I'm sorry. I think someone's obviously been misleading me. Anyway, the backs of the Daleks. They've got slight ironing board holding, the thing for holding iron.
Put your back to the Daleks.
No, these Daleks have strange backs to them.
They do. They're all hunched over looking.
Special weapon or something.
Yeah, maybe so.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame, all of them.
It's got something like a iron holder or something in it. I did like, that's one thing I did like. One thing I did like is the... This was a while back, but when the power started coming back to the Dalek ship, the old traditional sound effect, the traditional Dalek
control room,
which you've heard on this podcast many a time if you've been listening from day one.
I like the way Nick Briggs managed to use all his different voices for all the different kinds of Daleks, but he made the scientist one sound like a mad scientist. Self-destruct device non-existent. Yeah, that's the blue one. It sounded like a mad German scientist or something.
They're just about to kill the Doctor. The Doctor legs it, just gets out because it's a bit of distraction because Danny Boy comes along with the Spitfires. Of course, it annoys a lot of people.
Which, if I'm not wrong, the music behind this Danny Boy sequence when he goes in and actually shoots the ray out, it sounds like banjo music, which is very, American.
I think you got a different copy than we did because it's certainly not banjo music.
That's the way
it's almost over the top. It's almost over the top orchestral music. I like it.
Okay,
I like it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, So I'm just watching the scene with the Spitfires and. Yeah, I suppose it's quite good, really, in some ways. Although how they would fly through space without the sort of boosters.
It's well filmed. It's just Spitfires in space.
Spitfires in space.
It's all you have to say.
Five minutes from mentioning the possibility to
Like, and it's got a flux capacitor behind the
Yeah, that's what I was thinking around.
No special protection for re-entering Earth's gravity or anything, you know.
But I'm not too disappointed with that. If we had enough of an explanation, but if it was, I tried using them a few weeks ago, we need to fine-tune them, that would have just been perfectly fine with. I mean, this is a show, and I'm going to say it again, where this guy travels around in a blue police box to speak on the inside. I can buy some things.
Of course you can buy something. You just go down the shop with a bit of cash.
Preferably Adam Shaw.
That's Kirby again. Oh, sorry, that's the air raid warden, sorry. Now, he needs to do something with his tash, and he needs to make it a bit
darker. You mean Dad's Army?
Dad's Army. Anyway, right, so I'm just tweeting something about dancing on ice.
I thought the explosion when they blew up the dish or whatever it was that was sending the signal down to London, I thought that explosion looked a lot better than in The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood. There's an explosion in that that looks really pasted on from another thing, but this looks like it's part of the ship blowing up.
I agree with you, nice explosion.
So,
nice explosion. Good explosion.
There's a bit of a standoff. The Doctor is getting all smug with the Daleks. He's sort of threatening them, but the Daleks have paid their trump card. Bracewell is a bomb.
Is a bomb.
He's the bomb, man.
Very good. So basically he has to let the Daleks go. Which means, of course, in some ways, the Daleks win.
Yeah.
But also, in a Moffat standpoint, means he can redevelop the Daleks for future episodes. So basically, that's why they can get away.
There was a line when when they destroyed the Ironside Dalek, the two of them and the other one, the Time War one. The Doctor said, "Blimey, what do you do to the ones that go wrong?" And that was kind of a setup for Asylum of the Daleks, I thought.
Yeah.
Yes. Well done, Reese. See, this is why I have him on the show, listeners, because he occasionally spots things like that.
No, wait a minute. I thought about that when I saw it. I just didn't think to say anything.
Well, you know why you're on the show, Mary, and that's for the sort of instigation of innuendo, and obviously to look pretty.
That's my part in this, I know.
And
be like any other female Doctor Who companion.
Anyway, right, so there's a really great bit that comes up after this, after the Daleks get away. Well, they do get away, don't they? The Doctor runs in and punches Bracewell in the face and then shakes his hand around.
It's such a surprise he's done it. Oh, dear, oh, no.
Yeah. And remember, there was a bit of controversy when we were watching the trailer. For this. We were wondering, what the...
Yeah.
That in the scene with the Doctor holding a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mind you, they've all, well, not all of them, some of them have done that.
Do you know, I reckon they do that with all these things. They have to put something they can put in the trailer to make people think, oh, what's going on there then? And that's just, they have to work it somewhere into the storyline.
Well, it's like the trailer for The Doctor's Wife or that whole bunch of episodes. They had the Tennant TARDIS in there and we all went, what the hey?
Anyway,
right, so there's a rather poor effect of the chest opening up, I'm sorry.
It looks like he's wearing some sort of thing over his chest.
He does, yeah.
It reminds me of Fourth Doomsday.
After the chest has opened up.
I thought it was good attention to detail that his top button was still done up and things like that, that they did it up again around the thing that he's wearing on his chest.
I don't mind. Actually, after that bit, that bit on his chest, I haven't got a problem. It's just the way the chest looked as it was opening up. Just looked a bit.
It looks like it pops out afterwards.
Yeah.
Chest plate.
That's what he said.
Oh, pardon me. Then wait, we get up to the bit where obviously the Doctor's panic. I'm sorry. Protein. the bomb's starting to go off and the Doctor doesn't seem to be able to do anything about it. The Daleks are getting very sort of, we're going to win, and then Mary saves the day. Amy.
What? Mary saves the day, yes.
Amy saves the day by talking about Dorabella.
Dorabella, as the Doctor says. Yeah. It's a great name.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that because Amy is human that she would link into those emotions more than the Doctor, who's an alien, would.
It's just a bit silly, though, isn't it?
calling her a human. She's
Doctor's half human.
Oh, be quiet, Robert.
On the mother's side.
out, you two, out.
But it's funny, isn't
it? Woman.
There's a
it
bit
takes
of,
a woman to do that special connection.
But again, this is a thing that's happened before and afterwards, I should say, where sort of love has saved the day.
Yeah.
Or faith in something or love in something. It's just a bit, okay, can we think of some other ideas now? But, yeah, meh.
Oh, don't meh. That is what makes us humans and connect us to one another.
Okay, well, I don't, exactly. It's okay. Amy saves the day. I don't stop me.
Yes, it's a bit again.
Emotionless boys, yeah.
Weak. It's a bit weak.
You know, you guys, you're just tied up in all this scientific detail. We're the women. Yeah, we're the ones that know how to connect.
What do you call me?
Also,
Grace is a woman.
One of Churchill's crews... One of Churchill's crew finds out that her husband has been killed, or boyfriend's.
I thought that was quite a sweet story with her, actually. It was in the background, but I thought she did good performance.
Yeah. She did, yeah, considering.
Yeah.
But it was a bit sort of... You would have thought Amy would have gone over and sort of comforted her, but
yeah,
she's a girl, but she didn't.
That scene was a bit... Mission mash. It was all, you know, bit of emotion there, bit of fun with Churchill here and the doctor and him drinking tea and then almost spitting it out and all that. And it was all a bit random, I thought.
And I love the way the doctor, because he's so excited, you know, he's saying to everybody around him, you're brilliant, and you're brilliant. Yes. And he looks at Amy and says, and you're, oh, you know, he can't even say what she is.
Of course, so doesn't... Churchill try and go off with the keys of the TARDIS or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's Amy again that realises what's going on. And then there's a lovely scene where the Doctor goes to see Bracewell, and Bracewell thinks he's going to be sort of deactivated. And
jeez, he was not quick on the uptake, wasn't he?
No, not a bit.
And of course, the bits of kit lying around, the Dalek gun and everything looks great.
Mm. But speaking of building things quickly, he built his hand pretty quickly. His Star Wars hand, Luke Skywalker hand.
Yes.
Indeed he did.
No!
How's he going to explain that to Dora Bella?
Yeah, maybe that's his gift. He goes from theoretical to reality so
true.
Quickly.
That's impossible!
All right, Robert, calm yourself down.
That's anyway. Luke Skywalker.
And of course, the Doctor does another ha ha ha.
Yeah. He's not Curse of the Black Spot, though.
No.
It
isn't.
War.
Much better.
Does anyone actually say that?
What? Who are?
Yeah, that's what he says. It's
and then we get to another tedious bit as the TARDIS dematerializes and we see this stupid crack in the background.
Well, except I love that switch of Amy's from being so honored and respectful towards Churchill to going. Oi, Churchill.
Yeah. And that essentially is that. Right, well, I'm going to say my piece first before I let Rhys say his piece. And you know you did start, but I'm going to say my piece first.
My piece.
This is not an episode I would say I'd never watch again because the Daleks are in it for a start. And there's some great dialogue, there's some great fun bits in it. I've got over my dislike of the Teletubbies. But it's not really that good, but it's okay. It's quite good fun. There's some good performances. It's enjoyable always seeing Matt Smith on the screen playing the Doctor. And on the whole, and it's nice to see Kirby wearing that, helmet and stuff. Just need to do something with his tash. But on the whole, there's certain bits in it I really love, you know, especially the early on, like you say, with the Daleks and their green and being mysterious and stuff and being very Power of the Dalek-y. Yeah. And there's enough in it to make me think, well, I wouldn't think, oh, I must watch an episode of Doctor Who. I know I'll put on Victory of the Daleks, but I don't mind watching it. If I have to watch it on the telly. Yeah, I don't mind watching it. I watched it a few times. It's okay. It's good fun. Go on, Rhys.
Kirby.
Go on, Kirby.
It's one that I won't not watch. I mean, I've watched it many times. And since it's on the same disc as the first of the two Angel stories.
Which is the worst. which is the worst in my opinion.
Why
of the two?
I'm not understanding.
You're not understand. I think the first of the Angel one isn't as good as the second one, personally.
Okay. Sounds like next week is going to be interesting.
Yeah. This week's going to be interesting, too.
Anyway, I when I put this particular disc in, I'll watch parts of Victory of the Daleks. And
only parts.
The Spitfires, I just have a big problem with the instance creation of the Spitfires. Mm. And but
that an improbability drive.
It's an improbability factor. Anyway, it's got some brilliant lines, some brilliant stuff, and Ian McNeice is great, even though Churchill didn't look like that at that point in his life.
He's a wee bit large, yes.
Yes, yeah. It's okay.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay is a very good assessment of that story. Or, go on, Reese. Go on, Reese.
It's all right. Every time I watch it, it's probably because I'm used to the things that I hated when I first saw it, like the Teletubbies, like the very quick building of the planes and all that. But every time I watch it, it gets better, probably because I go in there with a lower and lower expectation of it, and I notice more lines, and I notice all these different things, and I think I enjoy it more every time. And I like Amy in the Doctor's performance, or Karen Gillan in it, Matt's performance, actually, because the characters aren't acting, but I like the way they work off each other. I like Churchill. I like the incidental character you commented about where she loses her boyfriend or whatever it is. It was incidental, but I think every now and again you see an actor who draws your attention on camera, and more than just because she's pretty.
Does he use
she did
pencils?
A good performance, I thought. Get out. But yeah, I like it, but I've mentioned my problems. Although I do have to say,
we've heard about your problems.
I'm sorry. Despite the fact that, pardon?
Sex identity problems.
No, you're thinking of no, never mind. I won't mention that on the podcast. the thing that I was going to mention, something that maybe Dr. Phil might not be too happy with, because he said whilst he likes the Doctor's theme, it is a little overused. I disagree, though, because I like every version of it, and in this there's quite a standout version of it, and it's on the soundtrack. It's when the Doctor lands.
I will find myself humming that theme.
Oh, yeah.
For no reason. I mean,
just when you want to be heroic.
It's something in my head. I'm humming it.
Yeah. Well, I noticed after...
He listens to it while dyeing his moustache.
It's his version of the drums for the master. But actually, I hum it whenever there's a new episode. After Asylum of the Daleks, I woke up the next day and I found myself just... And so, yeah, I like the execution of it, but maybe the Daleks aren't the best part of the episode.
No, I think they are.
Alright, the Daleks are good, the Teletubbies aren't.
True, but I mean...
Even the Teletubby ones they're bothering me less and less.
Yeah, because they're not... They're just a sort of an individual selection of Daleks. Hang on, pardon me.
They're scientists, though, aren't they?
Oh. Yeah,
and they weren't... They're not a sort of... There's millions of them around, there's just a few of them. Mm. They're a bit of an elite, aren't they? And we still have your general Daleks, like your drone Daleks around. Yeah, your proper Daleks. I haven't got a problem with them. It's just a sort of reinvention of them, I suppose. And, you know,
I like the story of them needing the testimony from the Doctor, because apparently they're inferior, the Ironside ones. I like that whole idea, but when these Power Rangers came out, I thought,
that's a good word for them.
The Power Ranger ones now.
Yeah, the Power Ranger Daleks.
Yeah, they look like they were the Power Rangers when I first saw them. Mm-hmm. But when they came out, I just thought, oh, the execution's fallen flat on its face. But I liked the setup for needing the testimony and that little bit of the story.
Yeah, it's interesting. Why is it we tend to call them Teletubby Daleks when they are more Power Ranger Daleks?
Yeah. Because they're brightly colored like the Teletubbies are.
So are the Power Rangers.
And pretty much as mindless as the Teletubbies are.
Tinky Winky Dipsy, la la.
Oh, we know what you watch on your daytime TV, then, Robert.
Hey, not anymore.
That was last year.
Right. Go on then, Mary.
Well, generally, I liked it. It's kind of a thin story, but I still liked it, and I like it even better after I watched The Confidential, where Mark Gatiss visits the Churchill Museum and War Room, how they've preserved everything. Then I had a greater appreciation for what I was looking at while I watched the episode. And yes, Kirby, it isn't the same. It's not as claustrophobic, but it is.
To be pedantic.
But yes, went to great detail, as the BBC does whenever they go to, into history. So I really appreciated that part of it. And I enjoyed Ian McNeice's performance. It's funny that pretty traditionally anymore, men who portray Churchill always seem to be pretty heavy. And when you look at the films of the time, he really isn't that heavy. I had the privilege of meeting and having a lot of conversation with Mr. McNeice at the Chicago TARDIS, and he's an amazingly energetic guy for all of his girth. You'd think,
so am I.
I don't know, Adam. I haven't had the privilege of sitting and talking with you. But
what do you think you're doing now, you silly woman?
Person. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he was charming and energetic, and he loved doing this, and he couldn't talk enough about what a good time he had any time in Doctor Who portraying Churchill.
Apparently,
they gave it another
typical 20 megabyte podcast.
Nobody gave another
one at a time
for me watching him do this now. So I mean, generally I enjoyed it, but that catchphrase "Spitfires in space" does survive beyond this episode to kind of every time something is a bit hard to swallow.
That's what she said.
But I watch it again.
I use the TARDIS as that example. It's a blue box is bigger on the inside than the outside. Come on, you're watching a show where that's part of the central premise.
That's true.
Right, who's next? That's got to be Robert. God help us. Here we go. Ready?
Get to the bunker.
Stop eating and talk to us, Robert.
He's trying to find for something to press. Come on, Robert.
No, I pretty much agree with everybody. But I think the Teletubby Daleks, they need very big doors to get through, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
True, yes. So they'd need new spaceships, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so their stories would be quite limited as to their getting around.
By the way, that's a cigar
factory.
Factory. Well, not factory. Yeah. It's just a warehouse.
Yeah.
But it's very big doors for cigars. I don't know.
So is that where Churchill kept getting his cigars?
Yes.
Probably gave him a free supply. But I pretty much agree with what you guys are saying. So, it's enjoyable enough. It's one you can go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another part of the Confidential that I really enjoyed was Mark Gatiss talking about what it was like to live through that bombing time in London. Yes. He gave, along with the footage that they showed, he gave a very good picture of what that was like and what the people...
Put that drink down, Mary.
How they survived. I finished my glass of wine. Can I go get another one?
Then you'll be more incoherent.
You're going to get an invite for the TARDIS Tavern if you're not careful.
As I sink into incoherence, yes. Another aspect of things that I'd like to throw in here is again, this was at Chicago TARDIS.
Yeah, be careful where you're throwing it.
Nick Briggs was there, and he talked about... I guess he was inside one of those Daleks as well. He was one of the operators. And he said that what no one else on the set would give any thought to is the hours that they were spending inside those Daleks.
Yeah.
And that you know, they would get thirsty, they would get hungry, everybody else would go to eat, and then it's like, wait a minute, somebody get us out of these Daleks. He said the only member of the cast that constantly thought about them, brought things to them, and talked with them and all that was Matt Smith. He was always over there seeing if he could get them anything and giving them encouragement, like, okay, I think this is the last take. Because he said inside those Dalek things, they can't hear very well, so they don't know what's going on other than certain directions that they're being given.
Nick Briggs would not be inside one. During the scenes where they were in the war rooms, that particular building has a second floor with a balcony, and he was up on the balcony with his ring modulator, looking down at what was going on.
Well, maybe he was inside one of the Teletubby Daleks, but he talked about the hours that they would spend inside there. And
yeah, they had more Teletubby Daleks than the other ones, so maybe they needed him in there as well as doing the voices.
But I thought it was interesting that Matt Smith would always take the time to, you know, see how they're doing and give them encouragement and let them know what was going on.
But speaking of the Daleks and the way that the operators control them, I think hats off to them, because whenever they're angry, they shake and they're throwing themselves around in there.
The gold one that was shaking?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking more of the white one when it got angry, saying, we will, you know, destroy London and cause the humans to kill themselves, each other, you know, stuff like that. I thought it was getting really angry when it was communicating with the Doctor.
I quite like the sound effect that the Daleks, when they were sort of, you know, just moving across that surface that they put in there as well. I quite like that, actually.
Yeah.
Question is, what do we do now? Either you turn up your clever machine, or I'll blow you and your new paradigm into eternity.
And yourself!
Occupational hazard.
Scott reveals nothing. TARDIS self-destruct device non-existent.
All right, it's a jammy dodger, but I was promised tea.
Hello, oh, sorry, we back to Doctor Who yet? Calling you.
Who's next? Who's next?
Well, I've just got to say...
Magic.
Well, if you heard a funny...
What did you think of the episode?
If listeners heard a funny noise in the background, Star did start snoring just a minute ago, and obviously
that was
pretty riveted by your
She was really annoyed by your talking of dancing on ice like us.
Anyway.
But speaking of Nick Briggs and Winston Churchill, apparently he played Winston Churchill at Doctor Who Live, musical performance / proms kind of thing they did.
Yeah.
And apparently he did a fairly good job.
Ah.
He's played it in other things as well, hasn't he? Another production not related to Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, pardon me. I'm drinking Pepsi at the moment, and it does sort of give me...
The Savid fart. Did the Blavid burp?
Oh, it's a medical
condition.
Did you
unzip your forehead?
Anyway, right. So, I've got some...
Excuses. Uh-huh.
Well, it's a proper excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Right, so I'm going to try and get some of this...
That's what she said.
Feedback. Be quiet.
This is Matthew from North Alabama sending in feedback on the Series 5 episode, Victory of the Daleks.
Hello,
one of
Matthew.
The most anticipated episodes of Series 5, this Mark Gatiss episode would see Gatiss. The first showdown between new Dr. Matt Smith and the series' oldest villains, the Daleks. Yet, while highly anticipated, this episode would receive a mixed reception upon its broadcast. 3 years later, we fans are left to ask the question, was this episode a rushed victory? Certainly, Victory of the Daleks covers a lot of ground. Not only is it the first showdown between the 11th Doctor and the Daleks, it also features an outer space battle between Spitfires and the Dalek saucer, not to mention homages to classic series Dalek stories, as well as introducing the radically redesigned and highly controversial Paradigm Daleks. Sound like a lot of ground to cover in 45 minutes? In short, yes it is, and that's just a bit of a problem.
I'm glad it's not a two-parter.
This episode has the distinct feeling of being a two-parter crammed into a single episode. It's easy to imagine the reveal of the Paradigm Daleks, and the old Daleks chanting, "Hail the Resurrection of the Master Race," or lines to that effect, as the cliffhanger of part one, so to speak.
I am the master.
Sequences such as the battle between the Spitfires and the Dalek saucer, spectacular as it is, push believability to the breaking point, as it is set up with just a few lines about gravity bubbles and hypersonic flight instead of having a proper setup where things are explained just a bit more. Indeed, things never seem to get explained properly, as the script rushes from point to point as if to sacrifice plot for spectacle. Perhaps the biggest side effect to this cramped feeling is the lack of depth out of the supporting characters. While both Winston Churchill and Professor Bracewell are both well-written and well-portrayed by the wonderful Ian McNeice and Bill Patterson, respectively, characters seem to fall by the wayside into nearly being one-dimensional. A prime example is the Blanche Breen character, whose depth seems down more to her performance than down to the script. Indeed, considering the depth that Gatiss brought to his supporting characters in his previous TV stories, The Unquiet Dead and The Idiot Lantern, this lack of depth seems rather surprising to say the least. Once again, it's almost as if the spectacle of the Daleks' return overrode everything else in the episode. Also, watching the InVision commentary for the episode, it's interesting to hear Mark Gatiss talking about the fact that he didn't think there was enough material to bring the story up to being a two-parter, while also admitting that a lot of material featuring the Blanche Breen character and others was cut out to help bring it down to the 43-minute running length. Now, that isn't to say that this episode is bad, mind you. While the script might feel as though it's rushing from point to point, the performances certainly don't. In fact, if there is a single redeeming aspect to this episode, it is the performance Matt Smith gives. Whenever Smith and the Daleks are on screen together, sparks fly, as Smith shows off a dark side.
Especially when he hits the Daleks with a
moment such as beating the Dalek in an attempt to get it to reveal its true self, showed that this Doctor, who just two episodes earlier was sitting at a table with fish fingers and custard, is a man still haunted by his enemies. Yet, Smith's best moments may well be when he is simply reacting to the Daleks, such as the horrified reactions he gives when the Ironside Dalek is revealed, or the big reveal of the Paradigm Daleks. With all this darkness, though, Smith gets to show off his lighter side as well, such as in his moments both at the beginning and the end with Churchill. It's Smith at the top of his game, and it very much sets up the performances that are to come in the rest of Series 5 and beyond. So where does this leave Victory of the Daleks, then? It has some fine performances from its cast, especially Matt Smith's Doctor, and some fine sequences as well. The script by Mark Gatiss, though, feels rushed as it uses those spectacular sequences rather than its characters to keep the story moving. The result is that this is an episode that feels, whether it was created as such to begin with, as two episodes crammed into one. A rushed victory, indeed it is. Best wishes to everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast from Matthew Kressel.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks, Matthew.
I've got a couple of points to counter there. I think I feel sorry for
fight.
A one-way fight at the moment. I feel sorry for Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat, because in the Confidential, you can see Moffat's a bit peed at having to redesign them. He didn't seem very impressed. He's saying, "I thought maybe I could redesign the Daleks," but it's like he was told to do it by the BBC because they had run out of Dalek merchandise, and they thought, how could we get more merchandise? I know, make them look many different colours. So that's, I think the cynical BBC put a lot of those. Well, it's partly true. There was a statement about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the spectacle that he was talking about that took over the plot was because the BBC wanted those to make the new Daleks look big and impressive so that they could say, "Here, look, kids, do you want to buy them?" And yes, it is cynical, but they did release a statement saying pretty much that.
And Adam did buy an Amy that was dressed in the same outfit, so that must have been a highly merchandisable episode.
Well, it was the short skirt.
Buy it anyway, so.
The short skirt didn't help. Hurt.
And the red hair.
Adam, it's a bit of plastic.
Yeah, no, that's what I found out when I got it home. Oh.
he couldn't the other blow it up.
I have some more audio feedback, and it goes a little bit like this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. I think the latest Bond film is about 007 having trouble making an internet podcast. It is called Skype, though.
Stop nicking my sound effects.
We both had a man doctor Phil driving while podcasting. Perhaps the new theme tune could be Cars by Gary Newman.
I had both hands on the steering wheel and had my earphones in while driving and podcasting. Thank you very much.
That's a picture of the Daleks by Mark Gatiss. The Anside Daleks are nice. Nicer than the Teletubby Daleks for exterminating them. The Doctor hitting a Dalek with a spanner seems less effective than Ace hitting one with a baseball bat in the classic series. That. Matt Smith will be in the 50th anniversary, and Tennant wants to be. That just leaves Eccles. It's dark in here. Is that you, Eccles? What are you doing in the anniversary special, Eccles?
I'm not doing anything in it.
You can't just ignore it.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
Hey, that's not
That's him.
Reese, is your window open?
I close it, especially because I'm going early.
It needs to be open because I've just broken wind. I do apologise. Poor indeed. The dog has just turned over and keeled over us. Quite funny.
Can I finish making that point I tried to make about Matthew's feedback?
Oh, sorry, I better turn the speaker off. There we go, yes.
No, you can't, Reese.
I'm going to anyway, because I'm a rebel. He said it might have worked better as a two-parter, but then we could have headed down Daleks in Manhattan. I mean, Muppets in Manhattan and Evolution of the Daleks, and it might have fallen even flatter on its face, if that works as a saying.
It does. Is that it?
Yeah.
Cool. Right. Let's see what we're going to talk about. David Tennant, who played the Doctor at some point. David Tennant.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Never heard of him.
No, he's in a new drama, ITV drama. I think it's called Broadchurch.
With Arthur Darvill in Prison to Zero. I mean,
yes.
Has it started there
precisely.
Yet?
Precisely. Yes, it has started there. We watched episode one. It took a bit of get going, and the character he plays is quite a grumpy character, so very dour. And it's not very cheerful.
What kind of accent? What kind of accent does he have?
Scottish accent.
Yay! Finally!
Why would he have a Scottish accent? I just can't imagine.
I don't know.
He must work awfully hard at it.
Please let me continue.
Why he chose to play it with the Doctor with a Scottish accent, I don't know.
please let me continue. It's basically starts off with a child dying, and it's a big murder mystery relating to this child's death, and like Deb said, how are they going to drag this over six episodes? No.
Was it the Daleks?
Be quiet. But yeah, I mean, Arthur Darvill was only in it for a split second, right at the beginning.
Apparently he was in another show called The Paradise or something like that, where he played Paradigm. A rather evil character and got killed off at the end, but apparently he was very good. And I missed him.
Arthur Darvill or David Tennant?
Arthur Darvill.
All right, okay. But it's okay. It's been given rave reviews by people who've come round to have their hair done, and Deb told Deb how brilliant it is. So she watched it and was slightly disappointed in relation to the reviews. But it's okay. I mean, it's not quite a nice area they've shot it in, the seaside and stuff, a little village at the seaside. So I'll give it a chance, give it a few more episodes before I decide whether to carry on watching it. There is another drama on BBC called Paradise, which is much more fun, with Ben Miller in it. He's like a policeman on some sort of Caribbean beach.
I like that.
And that does look really good.
It's got Pat from Red Wolf in it too.
Yeah, he plays a completely different type of character, but I thought they'd recognise him, and eventually I realised who he was.
Jules.
It's a bit like Agatha Christie style stories, isn't it? Because he gets everybody together at the end of every episode.
Unicorn and the Wasp.
And that. Mm. And sort of picks out the murderer at the end. So, but it's good. It's good stuff. Anyway, right.
I wrote as well. It's a bit like that.
News. This is what the Ice Warriors will look like when they return to Doctor Who next month. Do you know what they look like?
Rubbish?
They look like Ice Warriors.
It's good that they kept the traditional design, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It's good that they kept the design, but you know what, BBC? I'd have rather see it in the episode when it's broadcast. Pa!
All right.
Steady on.
So there.
Yeah.
You right now? Reese, you right now, Reese?
We just can't resist poking you with this stuff.
I know, it hurts.
That's what she said.
But can I just say, to justify my statement on why I don't want to hear about the Ice Warriors, because we saw in the trailer... Yes, yes, I know the Ice Warriors are returning. Don't poke me with it anymore. Can I get this point out? that's what she said. The Cybermen are returning, and Neil Gaiman is writing for them. That is enough to hype it up and sell the upcoming episodes to people, I think. And I think if kept saying that and then hit us with the surprise that, look at this, the Ice Warriors are in this episode, enjoy, and we saw it happen, I think we'd have all gone, oh, wow, look, they're back, instead of hearing about it before the episode is broadcast. That's why I'm annoyed.
I thought you were Reed.
No, I'm annoyed. Changed my name, because I'm so annoyed, I changed my name.
Say my name. So you're a single noid. What's a group of noid?
Noiders.
You are annoyed.
I'm part of the Noiders family.
Be alert, the world needs more alerts.
Anyway.
That's
slightly ajar. BBC Worldwide have released a new clip from the forthcoming animation for the 10th Planet, which features the regeneration scene, which everybody's already seen in non-animation form of the first to second Doctors. But it's okay. I quite liked it, actually, when I watched it. That's available on a BBC YouTube facility. So if you go on YouTube, search for that, you can see that.
It's a spoiler, by the way.
Is it?
The Doctor regenerates.
Oh, okay. By the way, the DVD is due to be released in late 2013.
Excellent.
Ooh, excellent.
No, go on then.
Is that late Dent Arthur Dent?
I'll spit it out, Reese.
6'8" descendant.
It's not a spoiler, Kirby, because we know that's happened. It's in the past.
It's a spoiler if you've never, ever watched it, though, and haven't had any...
It's a spoiler if you lived in 1963.
We're just
63? It's 1966. Get your facts right.
Yeah.
No, it's still a spoiler if you lived in 63. And in fact, if you heard about it in 58, it would still be a spoiler. There's going to be a thing called TV, and there's going to be a show called Doctor Who, the main character's going to regenerate.
Right.
Adam, what is the DVD that you received recently that had a bit of it animated?
The Reign of Terror.
Reign of Terror. How is the animation in that?
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm starting to bank up stuff I need to watch. Okay. Now
too
I've got two
editing.
Things.
I need to watch. And it's sepia toned as well, which is...
Do you mind? Oi, talk about spoilers. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. And I got
Naughty Robert. Tell him off, Reese.
I've been hearing very, very mixed reviews about it, so I was curious as to how you reacted to it.
Me or Robert? Because I haven't watched it yet.
Well, if Robert's watched it, then I want to know his reaction.
Yeah, it's good to watch it, rather than just trying to fill it in your mind. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that aspect of it, but there's too much editing compared to how it was.
Punching your microphone again.
He is.
No, I'm just playing around with the cleaning the top of.
Well, don't do it when we're recording. For goodness sake!
No, but when you're watching the episode, it sort of seems out of place with the animated ones because, A, it is sepia toned instead of black and white, and B, there's too many edits in the way that it's cut. So it's out of place compared to the rest of the episodes, which don't have all this cutting, which you'll see if you have a look in that 10th Doctor, I mean, not 10th Doctor, the 10th Planet, the 10th Planet clip. If you watch that, which is on the DoctorWhoNews.net, you'll see what I mean. They do a bit too much cutting when they show, when they could have just held a shot of the Doctor. They sort of cut to the Doctor's face many times with different shots, which is a bit like the episode. So that's what spoils it a bit.
Sounds like the Bill in the last few episodes. They were cutting a lot in that show.
that's sort of the way that they did television back then, was to film things like stage plays without a lot of the edits that we're so used to now. And maybe they were trying to do that to make it appeal to modern audiences. I don't know.
But it just jars with the rest of the episodes, if you know what I mean. Which,
yeah,
in the traditional way. So
I got it, but I watched the extras and haven't watched the story yet.
Okay. It's quite easy to watch the episodes, though, to tell you the truth. Mm. I mean, I watched all six episodes in one go, and it flew by, honestly, it did.
Well, I must admit, though, when I watched The Reign of Terror, while me and Alicia were watching all of the series, and obviously all Alicia watched were the actual episodes that exist. She didn't bother doing what I did, and I watched the episodes that exist, then I listened to the audio for the missing episodes and filled in the gaps that way. And in fact, the VHS that I have has a sort of amalgamation of the missing episodes with, I think, William Russell.
It's done like the original, yeah, it's done like the original Invasion VHS. And they got what's the name, covering the missing episodes.
Yeah, they had some actual clips, they sort of teleclips, I suppose, which they sort of put in to try and show, give a feel of what we weren't watching. And that was
you're,
okay.
You're thinking of Carol Ann Ford, Adam.
Oh, was it? Sorry, it was a long time ago since I watched it. And I've only watched it once.
Yeah.
But yes, that's right. William Russell did The Crusades, I think. Or was it something like that? I can't remember now. Speaking of
DVDs that are more recent, I just got the Shada special edition.
Yes.
And as with Reign of Terror, I've watched all the extras and was showing the extras to the girls the last couple of days.
I think I've watched the extras on that. I just haven't watched the story itself because it's been six parts.
I already had a copy. True back in the day VHS to DVD copy.
Me too.
So I guess that's keeping me from watching it again. I love the story.
Yeah,
is it silly that I'm upset that I won't ever be able to do that? Because really, it's hard to get your hands on VHSs and convert them.
I think it sounds a bit silly,
but that sounds like a nice novelty thing to do.
What about the old novel thing we used to do when we used to have to get fourth, fifth generation copies of Doctor Who episodes off people? In brown paper bags, and some people.
Yeah, that charming
was in the
now.
UK.
Well, some people used to have to pay money for them as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But I did actually acquire the full collection of Doctor Who for that wave, thanks to Mr. Pearson in East Cowes, who had lots of contacts in that. And of course, some of them had Australian
content.
Be quiet. First Australian, content. You know, announcers
content.
On it.
Has been made.
So, but honestly, Reese, I'm quite pleased I don't have to do that. It's much nicer
I know,
to be able
but
to.
It sounds charming and interesting, whereas
yeah,
now,
that's all it
if
is.
You really, really want it, you could be naughty and go online.
That is all it is. It's just charming and a nice memory. Let's think what we had to do in those days.
Just watch the Revenge of the Cyberman extra.
That's a brilliant extra.
That explains it very, very well, yeah.
But all I can say about it was, in those days, I was watching episode. You get your tape and you put it in, and it's an episode or a story of Doctor Who you haven't seen before, you can't remember because it's so long ago or something like that. And that was what was nice. There were so many then that I hadn't seen, but now there's hardly anything. But in my hand here, I have Aztec Special Edition, which has something I've never seen before, and that is an episode of
Galaxy 4,
but a reconstruction. So I haven't seen this at all. I've heard the audio, but I've not seen anything image-wise for that episode. So that's something I'm really looking forward to, and that's what I will be watching tomorrow.
Yeah, so. I've got to decide, do I want to buy another copy of the Aztecs just to get
yes,
that?
Yes, you do. I'm not even thinking of the Aztecs. It's a Galaxy 4 DVD for me. This is what this is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm absolutely delighted. In fact,
the Aztecs is a good story.
Well, there's a couple of new extras on there, aren't there? But I want to say I'll probably tuck the Aztecs disc away and put the Galaxy 4 disc in my little pouch for Galaxy 4 and take out the... I haven't actually got it, have I? What am I talking about? I haven't got a pouch of Galaxy 4 because it doesn't exist. But it does now. So, yeah.
Who did the commentary on the Aztecs?
Oh, God, you're asking questions. McNeice.
Verity Lambert. And what's the name?
William Russell, Carol Ford, and Verity Lambert, yes.
Ooh, okay.
Right, anyway, so that's
I wonder, with animation catching on like it is, I just wonder if they're going to go back and maybe do entire stories like Marco Polo.
Mary, I'll tell you something, Mary. Apparently their budget only stretches to about 2 episodes of animation.
Oh,
so,
really?
So
we'll get the Crusades then.
Yeah, they could do the Crusades.
I think we will eventually see everything reconstructed. Yeah. Yeah. It just may take a while.
Yeah, and I think you know, when all these DVDs are out and the BBC are starting, you know, are starting to lose money, not lose, but sales of DVDs are going to dip, aren't they, at some point. A way of keeping it going is by generating a bit of money by animating missing stories. You know, they might as well.
Yeah, but then they've got to weigh up, because I'm not sure how the invasion sold, including
Robert,
the Reign of Terror.
You've got to think.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're being cynical.
What I'm saying is, like, you mentioned Marco Polo. Nobody's seen Marco Polo.
I didn't mention Marco Polo. The Reign of Terror.
Oh, sorry. Mary mentioned Marco Polo.
Polo.
Yeah.
Marco.
Polo. I've seen a reconstruction of some of it on YouTube.
Yeah, I have too, and I would love to see it animated or something. I'd love to see the whole story.
Yeah. That is an option. I know, like you say, budget-wise is not so good, but if they're not got any money coming in for DVDs, that would, if they bought out a fully reconstructed animated version of Marco Polo, you can guarantee that a few million Doctor Who fans would buy that. That's quite a lot of money coming.
Not necessarily, Adam, I don't think so.
Well, I would.
Why? Why?
I would. Yeah, I'd buy it, but I'm saying there might be a bit of risk involved in that.
I think not. Doctor Who fans are mad and will
buy. I don't know.
Right, all right. Let's test this. Let's test it.
Right, the first animation.
Reese, would you buy it?
Yes.
Kirby, would you buy it?
Absolutely.
Mary, would you buy it?
Yes, I would.
Robert, would you buy it?
Yes.
So would I. So that's 100%. My survey proves.
The 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yes. Well, so many more people are getting into Doctor Who through the new Who, and they want to go back and see, you know, historical Who.
But what my argument? My argument for that is
they don't have the patience to watch those reconstructions. So I think there'd be a big market.
I think that's what I'm saying. The new Who fans, you know, they've got their new Who. That's fine. You've got the Doctor Who fans. You like the whole lot, like us, but. Mm-hmm. The core Doctor Who fans, of which there are millions, especially in America, will want stuff like this. And if you're going to sell a few million, and it will be a few million DVDs,
it's
going to bring lots and lots of money in for the BBC, even if they do have a budget. And it's going to be, surely the budget for animation is going to be less than a few million, isn't it?
I mean, they can only put out so many special editions of what they've already put out.
Right.
Yeah.
And not just Doctor Who fans will buy them. There are some people who try to collect everything they can of old television, and if this is an animated version of archived Doctor Who that was wiped, then they'll probably get it because it's giving you a visual representation of it.
Yeah, just for its collector's value.
Listen, should I send a message to Babel Colour and ask him whether that be viable, whether they'd consider doing something like that?
I'd wait until all Doctor Who DVDs are out, all the current ones we've got, give it a couple of months when there's no new DVDs on the horizon, not including special editions of ones that have already been come out, you know, and see what they say then. Because at the moment, we've still got unreleased Doctor Who on DVD, haven't we?
But we're still having a few months, though, as well.
Okay.
Like the 10th Planet's not coming out to the end of the
year. I'm still waiting for Zygon. I want Zygon.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed. Anyway, we're on news.
I can't wait for that.
And the Demons on UK TV. But that's
Demons.
Demons on Australia and New Zealand. Anyway, the BBC have announced the 50th anniversary Doctor Who event. The BBC have announced details of a special 3-day event to be held in London in November.
Going?
No, to celebrate 50 years of Doctor Who. Kirby, I don't have any money. Look, when my Doctor Who quiz book comes out, obviously if listeners to the show buy it, that will help fund the show. But it's not going to make me rich enough to be able to travel to these sort of events that I'd love to go to.
You're a prolific author, published.
Don't
and,
be
and
sarcastic.
Actually, can I say those trailers for your books sounded really cool. I want to try and get my hands on a copy now.
Yeah,
they did. Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the.
No, it's not a joke. I'm really interested.
You'll have to keep waiting because he's serious. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
So say we all.
Thank you very much. Anyway, right. That's a Doctor Who magazine 458, Zach, with a lovely picture of the Doctor with his new haircut and some gorgeous-looking bird.
Short hair in that. Mm.
She almost looks like Karen Gillan there.
Very nice-looking bird.
Pardon? Matt Smith almost looks like Karen Gillan?
No. Jenna
Coleman. That's what I thought I heard, too.
Yeah.
No, Jenna Louise Coleman's on the cover, too, with him.
Oh.
Well, and then it says, a long-lost interview with Third Doctor John Pertwee. Well, that was their featured article in the last magazine, so where did this interview come from?
Indeed.
Maybe there's a second part. Okay.
Yeah.
I will let you know, which I haven't before, that our local newspaper, the Isle of Wight County Press, has a competition running for writing a Doctor Who story. There's an adult section, a child section, and I don't know what the other section is, actually. But you have to pay a certain amount of money to send in your entry, and your story's got to be 1,500 to 2,000 words. I have written something, and I will be sending it off.
And do you have to write it as a script, or do you just have to write it as
a story?
Okay.
A simple story. Cool. But I could have sent the script off, but when they said it was 1,500 to 200, my script is about 5,000 to 600 words, so it was too long. I wrote something new for it. I'll send that off soon, and I'll let you know how badly I get on. But obviously, that's only for residents of the Isle of Wight, so don't even think about trying to send in for that. But I thought it was quite interesting.
We could do a collaborative thing, and you could send it in, and if they made an episode, it would be great publicity because it would say written by the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yes, but then, of course... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to go down the road. Anyway, Mind of Evil is to be screened at a festival in Birmingham, a flat pack festival.
And actually, today for you, although it's yesterday for Robert and I, Adam J. Purcell of Staggering Stories went there to London to the BFI to see Mind of Evil.
Oh, excellent.
I know this because I talked to him this morning for you, but yesterday evening for me.
Okay, thank you. BBC Books reissue 11 novels for the 50th anniversary, which is The 10 Little Aliens, Dreams of Empire, Last of the Gadarin.
Samurai.
Gadarin?
Or that Samurai. Even.
Some of these have already been released, obviously.
I know. Festival of Death.
Some of these,
Fear of the Dark, Players, Remembrance of the Daleks, Earthworld, Only Human, Beautiful Chaos, The Silent Stars Go By. So there's 11...
Remembrance of the Daleks is very good to get. I'd recommend that.
That's by
I've read that.
Ben Aronovich.
I love the covers for the books, actually. I love the new design they've got.
New design? Well, who's
new.
Who's on there, then?
It sounded like David Tennant, then. New.
That's about it for news, really. Did anybody notice?
Well, no, there's also a thing on what I'm looking at that advertises for Big Finish. They're having a special on... they have three stories out for Wendy Padbury as Zoe in the Companion Chronicles. And they're offering them very cheaply. I did snap those up because they're cheap. Which reminds me, I also read an article where our celebrity interviewee and friend of the show, Daphne Ashbrook, is going to be in a Big Finish release later this year.
Excellent.
It was in 2011. she and one of her co-stars from the movie were in one called Time Vault. And then now the one that they're releasing later this year is another story from Time Vault. So
they
sounds like...
They let them out of the vault. Okay.
But the original Time Vault also had a lot of the other classic companions in it.
That's a very good one, that one.
Is it? Okay. Well, then this next one, I don't know who's going to be in this one with her. But, so I wanted you to know.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. Right. How about a little bit of a quiz, then? Some more questionnaires have been compiled. It won't, because I'm writing about 1,000 questions. I don't think it's going to put a complete dent in the possibilities of selling copies of this particular ebook.
I've been listening to some of the quizzes that they had at Galley, and I'm telling you, the questions that they were asking, I don't think anybody could answer. No, they couldn't.
I listened to all the quizzes, and half, I'd say over half the time, I can answer things that can't be answered. Except,
oh, gee, what a surprise.
Except I felt really bad last week when you kept hitting me with things where I'm just kind of going,
That's because you can answer the ones you're listening to, but you're the one being asked, and it's harder when you're on the spot.
Right.
That's a little bit of brain freeze. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like quiz shows when you watch quiz shows.
We'll see. Mm. We'll see how this goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fire away, Adam.
Pardon me. I'm not quite ready yet.
So. Fire away, Bert.
I'm just creating a scoreboard. right, we're going to do it in a slightly different way this week. Because I'm going to give everybody a turn rather than doing...
Brain freeze hits.
Because it is the question... Turn. Excuse me. All the questions are in random order anyway, if you remember how I was compiling it. So it's fairly fair. Oh, God, what's happened here? I can't get it to...
Adam posted his video cover.
Good,
DVD cover.
You can see the cellophane wrapper still on it.
Haven't even opened it. My goodness.
I know. I'm looking forward to that.
You said can wait to watch.
I know, you pedantic person.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to have to wait.
It's podcast,
so he can't wait. That's actually
pretty
correct.
Okay, right. Are we ready? This is Kirby first. It's just the order. I just happened to have written the names down in. Kirby first. Mm-hmm. Now, this is question number. Should we do 9 questions? Yeah. Or should we do 10? Or maybe do 9 and maybe have a tiebreaker, number 10. Here we go. It's what was the name of the woman who the doctor. This is you, Kirby. Who the doctor inadvertently got engaged to. In the first Doctor story, the Aztecs.
I don't remember.
I know.
Is that a guaranteed you don't remember?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Robert said I don't know. Yes, throw it open. You said I don't. Oh, you know. So Robert has come in with what he thinks is the answer.
It's Camilla, isn't it?
No.
Is it like Camelina?
I should really give Robert a minus for getting that one wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But I won't.
Because he should
Kamika.
Too late. No, I can only take your first answer, I'm afraid. It was Kamika, yes. But unfortunately, bad luck.
Yeah, my go-to answer is going to be 42.
True.
Right. Mary.
Oh dear.
This is going all fun. Right, Mary, this is your question. Who directed the fourth Doctor story, Terror of the Zygons?
Who directed it?
Yes.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope everybody's got their Wikipedias turned off, otherwise I'll be getting very cross.
I know who did.
Well, you seem to know the last one.
And I got it right.
I'll throw a name out in hopes it's remotely right. Graham Harper.
Incorrect. No. Robert?
Douglas Camfield.
Is correct. I hope you haven't got
I haven't got it.
He must have Wikipedia open.
I don't.
I know.
No, Robert has a mind for these details.
Oh, he's honest. Come on.
You've heard him before.
Kirby. He's on. He's an honest man.
Yeah.
And it's Robert's go.
I know better than you, though.
Yeah, he knows all this stuff. Okay.
Anyway, well, Robert's 1 point up. But anyway, this is number 3, the question number 3. In February 2013, BBC Worldwide confirmed...
Who's this question for?
You!
Oh,
your name's Robert, yes. Isn't it? I'll start again. Robert.
Yes?
In February 2013, BBC Worldwide confirmed that the missing episode of What Second Doctor Story were to be animated for DVD release later in the year.
I swear it is.
Is the correct answer.
Robert's going to win this.
I swear it.
Right. Number 13 in the book, but number 3 is it? I don't know where we are now. This is for Reese.
Is that to me now? Yeah, yes. I thought so.
Who played the captain in the fourth Doctor story, The Pirate Planet?
Kirby.
No, it wasn't him. It wasn't
him. Who played him? Well, I'm going to say I've got no idea.
Okay,
so anybody else? Would anybody else like to come in with a guess or an answer?
What was the question again?
Oh, please listen. Who played the captain in the fourth Doctor story, The Pirate Planet?
Brian Purchase. Bruce Purchase. He was an Australian and he died just a couple of years ago.
Is the correct answer.
Good grief.
If I answer Classic Who episodes and it's not something like Who Played the Fourth Doctor, you'll know I've used Wikipedia, so don't ask me that kind of question.
It wouldn't be much of a Doctor Who book if the question was Who Played the Fourth Doctor, would it?
I know.
I'm better with characters, although I missed the Aztec one. I'm better with characters than actors.
Thank you. Well, this is your question, Kirby.
Uh-oh.
What story followed the Third Doctor tale, Death to the Daleks, in March 1974? So what story was after, or came next, after Death to the Daleks? Can't speak. Death to the Daleks.
Without looking it up, I can't tell you.
I can tell you.
I know you can.
Sure you can.
Go on then,
it's
Robert.
It's got Agador in it.
Go on then, tell me what it is.
Monster of Peladon.
That's the correct answer, right then.
I haven't seen either of the Peladon episodes.
Well, you better get around and watch them.
I have them.
Robert, are you okay?
Hey, I have them. Haven't watched them.
Oh,
okay.
Then you can have a point, because you have them.
That's not the point. Right. It's Mary's go.
Death to the Daleks, the one with that really weird music.
Harry Blyton, Enid Blyton's nephew or something.
I thought you were going to say karaoke.
Is Death to the Daleks the one where it's
Exelon.
Got this timey-wimey solution?
Exelon.
No.
Can we move on?
Yeah, okay.
Right, next question is for Mary. What was the title of the episode? Sorry, I started that one again. What was the title of episode 1 of the first Doctor story, The Daleks?
Ooh.
Come on, that's easy, Mary.
Grip, 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 grip. Yeah, that too.
That was a bit of the sound effect in the background. Very good. She has no idea. Does anybody else know?
Is it called the Daleks?
Incorrect.
No, it's the mutants, isn't it?
No.
I was going to say, damn.
You only get 15 guesses, you know. The answer is the Dead Planet.
Oh.
Right, the next question is for
Not
Robert.
The Planet of the Dead.
Robert. Robert. Yes. Right, here we go. What first Doctor story first used the stunt team Havoc? Havoc.
First Doctor one.
Yes.
Did you say First Doctor?
Yes.
Oh, I've read this in the question? I'm just thinking. I know
really?
It'd be one that's on DVD. It wasn't the Gunfighters, was it?
Incorrect. Anybody else with a guess?
Oh, no, I know. War Machines.
No. Anyone else with a guess?
The Chase.
Good guess, Mary, but wrong. The answer is The Smugglers.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a good guess from Mary. I should really give her a point for that, but I'm not going to.
Oh. I'll give her a round of applause.
It's Reese's turn.
For being somewhere in the same doctor.
Yeah.
That's what I get a point for.
Magic has just picked up Isabella's coat, taken it into the corner of the room, scraped it out with his paws, and it's now decided to sit on it.
By the way, you've got a very clever chair, you know.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, right.
Whose
turn it? It's Reese's turn. Reese.
Yes?
What Doctor Who story featured a Sontaran called Stor?
Oh, my God.
We talked about the
only... I know two of them. I was going to say, the only story in Classic Who that has a Sontaran, it would be the Time Warrior, or whatever it's called, but... Then we've reviewed one of them.
That's the only story that has a Sontaran.
That's Lynx.
That I know of, the name
oh,
of.
Oh, you left that part out.
Did I? Sorry.
Yes.
I'm thinking. Is it... does the two Doctors have them in there?
No. Anybody
okay,
else?
Well, I'll go for that, and I'm wrong.
I know.
Go on,
Invasion of Time.
There's the correct answer. Right, who's next? That'd be Kirby.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready, Kirby?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Here we go. What was the name of the character played by Stubby Kay in the seventh Doctor story, Delta and the Bannermen?
Oh! Oh, is it? Oh, I think I know.
I don't remember the name of the character. I love that particular... Delton the Bannerman is one of my favorite seven Doctor stories. But I don't remember the name of the character. And Stubby K, I just watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit the other night, and I can point at Stubby K there.
So, I think you pointed him in Delta and the Bannerman too. You just don't know his name.
Is that a pass?
That's a pass.
Okay, who's next? Who's going to try and come up with the answer for that one then?
Oh, is it the gatekeeper? Hang on.
Kirby's coming back.
Oh. No, I have a question about the format of your book. Will you have this as multiple choice or just questions?
Just questions. I don't think multiple choice is really challenging enough for people. Besides, correct. It's Weissmuller, but that's close enough, yes. Yeah.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. I give up. Here's one.
All right, here we go. Right. Here's the next one. This is for Mary. You ready, Mary? Nickname did the mad computer Wotan have for the Doctor in the first Doctor story, The War Machines? So what nickname did the, that's inverted commas nickname, did the mad computer Wotan have for the Doctor in the first story, Doctor story, The War Machines?
Put it this way,
will you stop? No, be quiet.
I can use all the help I can.
Quiet.
Yeah.
Or I'll deduct a point.
He is required?
It's not.
Don't take any notes. Just listen to the question. What nickname did the mad computer Wotan have for the Doctor in the first Doctor story, The War Machines?
I want to say Bob, but that's the name of the book.
That's the name of the
character. I love Bob.
I think that's the name of a computer. That's not the name for the Doctor. Okay, I give up. I pass.
Okay.
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who is required.
Reese came up with the answer first.
Yes!
Because I knew he called him that, which is wrong, but it's a nickname, so cool.
Oh, all right, very good.
That's why that was nickname inverted commas, because it was...
Yeah. Good on you. That's what gave me the clue.
Okay, right. Next question is for Robert. The character Garron, played by Ian Cuthbertson, featured in what fourth Doctor story?
Oh, that was Rebus Operation.
It was indeed.
Good grief.
This is the Doctor Who.
Yeah, Kirby, you thought you had a corner on knowing all this detail.
And one more question for luck, which is going to go to Reese. In fact, this is for Reese. Hang on.
He's right.
Okay. Who wrote the 10th Doctor story, Rise of the Cybermen / The Age of Steel?
Tom McRae, although it was co-written with RTD.
They were all co-written with RTD.
Is the correct answer. Yes. And the results of this week's quiz. In last place is Kirby and Mary. In second place, Reese with 2.
Ooh.
But the winner with 7 points, Robert Wikipedia Haynes.
I don't call it Wikipedia.
It's all a bit of fun.
Who sponsors the show?
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Barry, who sponsors it?
It's who dot... Oh, no. Yes! Who won dot? Who won dot .com.uk /UK?
.com?
No.
Have another go. It's not. This isn't a quiz, you know.
Co.uk.
Oh, sorry, say that again.
Whowon.co.uk with a lot of support and help.
That is whoone.co.uk.
Yes.
Well done.
And it's not Doctor Who is required.
And what does WOTAN stand for? What does WOTAN stand for?
What?
Woe is me.
Little Operating Thought Monologue.
Thank you for that.
Do you know that?
Yes. That. Thank you. Whowon.co.uk.
Adam?
Pardon?
That's something to add to your book.
What?
What does WOTAN stand for?
Well, they know now.
Yeah. They've rather given the game
away. They know the answers to the other questions now, too. Yeah.
Only people that listen to the show will know the answers to those questions. And I don't intend reading out all 1,000 questions on this podcast, although I could do.
I don't know, it's kind of fun.
I know, yeah. It is, isn't it? Well, tune in again next week for the next 10 questions of the book.
Say Robert's going to win, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's right. All right.
Now, well, I could start deducting points for people being too pedantic, et cetera, et cetera. And it, maybe maybe he has to get the answers right word for word as well. Thank you, everybody. Next week, apparently, we're recording on a Sunday, and I nearly forgot, actually, what I was going to say. As we will be for a month of Sundays. Sunday, Sunday, da 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 right, and we will
talk. Except for after the new 7B story comes out, aren't we doing that one on a Monday?
But we'll see what happens. A bit nearer the time.
If it does start on the 31st, Sundays, we're able to do that if we start a bit later. But yeah, it could be a Monday if you want it to be.
So next week, it's the Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone, two episodes.
Bob.
Yeah,
good stories.
And also, if you want to send in feedback or your own opinions of those episodes, please do so 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And if you just want to send in an email or audio, just say hello or tell us how fantastic we
hello.
Are. Or how pedantic Kirby is. Or how wrong Reese is. Or how lovely right. Mary is. Or how difficult Robert is to hear. That's what you can do. 20mb.feedback@gmail.com.
Send in feedback. All is forgiven, Jim the Fish and Patrick Bishop. Or is it Patrick Bishop?
Yes. Andy Nunney.
He sends in feedback.
Andy Nunney and the lovely Dawn.
Andy Nunney, yeah.
Yes, and the other chap, Tekerman James, and that Glade Packer bloke, and Graham. Graham.
I'm sure they.
Graham Sheridan.
I miss you. And I'm so grateful to Ian Kirk and to Matthew Kressel for being
absolutely.
So faithful with theirs.
Dr. Phil, I was going to say.
Faithful.
Wendell Dulman. Yes, he wants sent in feedback to this show. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that Wendell Dulman.
I don't understand you. Who is it?
Wendell Dulman.
Oh, Wendell, right.
Omega podcast. And who's that other chap? Leeson Fisher from something called the Radio Rattlon podcast. So used to send
and
in
a
feedback.
Doctor Who podcast.
Sorry, I don't know what that's all about.
And it doesn't have to be audio. We're happy to read your emails out loud.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Well, I will. I know you.
Another chap. That one. I used to love reading out the emails of that person who couldn't spell a word correctly. What was that one, Reese?
Adam Pearson. Oh, wait, that's you.
Shut up. No, the one who had a crush on Alicia.
Season.
Oh, what's
they kept on saying season.
Is that that?
No, that means he's correct there. So.
Do you remember? Didn't he used to send him feedback to your show?
Yeah.
Reese?
I don't know.
He had a crush on Alicia.
Mr.
Ram. Yeah.
Mr. Ram.
He used to send stuff into the Flashing Blade. I remember him now. He's probably doing his GCSE, so that's probably why he's not writing into the show. That's why.
He still writes Staggering Stories,
something that I just remembered, kind of Doctor Who. I closed down my browser, so I'm going to have to bring it back open. Someone wants to go back and look at what I love posted yesterday.
I'm quite pleased you said bring it up. That obviously will give me the opportunity to use a sound effect for that particular bit.
No, I'm just...
Starting next week is Neverwhere on Radio 4.
Well, I haven't watched that yet, and I should do. Alistair Pearson lent me the DVD of that, and I never got around to watching it.
To it on Radio 4.
No, the television version.
Yes, I'm talking about the blooming television version.
Well, the reason I brought it up was because of all the Doctor Who connections with the audio version, including. It is.
Well, how are we able to hear it, Kirby?
We can hear Radio 4.
Yeah. We can? Okay. How?
Yes.
Yeah. Radio can hear, but not...
Tell me and everybody on the podcast, how can we hear it?
Follow the link...
On the radio.
You'll do what?
Follow the link on Facebook and just Google BBC Radio 4. You can listen to it.
I just have to Google it, huh?
Available.
And why is this not opening? Oh, here we go.
That's what she said.
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to bring up the cast list.
I'm sure you are. Finger in the throat.
Jeff Riddell says, don't drink cocoa while recording.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm drinking Coca-Cola.
So if we go on, if we earlier. So for everybody who wants to do this, if we go to Google and put in BBC Radio 4, that will connect us so we can hear it?
Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought you were talking about now.
I think so, yeah.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously it's written by Neil Gaiman, who has provided us with...
Doctor Who. Doctor's Wife and a forthcoming episode of Doctor
Who. Yes. The character of Hunter is played by Sophie Okonedo. Only slightly connected. Yes, only slightly connected with Doctor Who is Benedict Cumberbatch. I think he plays someone called Sherlock.
No, but his mum was in Doctor Who a couple of times. Yes. So that's Wanda Ventham, who is very nice looking.
I haven't heard of Benedict Cumberbatch. I've heard of Cabbage Patch, though.
And he's in Star Wars Into Darkness as well.
Star Trek.
Star Wars, Star Trek.
I'm sorry, Star Trek.
Talking of Star Trek. Hey, Princess Leia. Be quiet. Drinking? Princess Leia's coming back.
You can count on me to muck up all the details.
You're talking over me, you naughty people. Princess Leia's coming back to Star Wars.
Yes. Anthony Head is
Anthony. I love how interested you were, Kirby. Yeah, whatever. Here we go. I've got some more information.
Bernard Cribbins, if you've ever heard of him.
Yes.
Bernard Cribbins.
Bernard Cribbins, yes. Never mind.
Andrew Sack.
Did he?
He's been in Doctor Who. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, on Big Finish.
Okay, Robert. Where was Andrew Sack?
Okay. He was Sack from...
In what Doctor Who story was Andrew Sack?
The City of Death, was it?
No.
It was a Big Finish story. Yeah, I said it was a Big Finish story.
Oh, yeah, he played Adric, didn't he?
That's it.
Oh, did he?
Did he?
He did, yes. Yeah, the old Adric.
He was in Shada.
Was he?
Yes.
Was he? We should have known that.
Very good.
The audio one?
Yes.
That was that's the flash. I haven't listened to that yet. I've only seen the first episode.
Oh, and that's one nice thing about the new Shada.
The new Shada.
Yeah, it's got the flash animation on.
It's got a good copy of the flash animation. Also, Yasmin Page is in Everywhere.
Well, there you go.
Okay, well, I've gone to the BBC Radio 4 site and it says you can listen live, so.
Excellent.
It's easier to listen live than dead.
You remember?
Better than dead.
Yeah. Yes. Age's connection to Doctor Who?
Who? Who's,
Robert,
who's,
remember Yasmin Page's connection to Doctor Who? Who is she?
I can't remember.
Oh my god, who the hell cares?
Hey?
Sorry?
Maria Jackson, Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Which one?
Maria Jackson, series one of Sarah Jane Adventures. And a bit of series two.
I've only watched those episodes once, though. It's a bit hard for me to remember.
You just impersonated Robert Kirby.
Anyway, back to ending the podcast. They have released unofficially released some titles for the forthcoming episodes. Apparently, the next episode of Doctor Who is going to be called...
Spoilers.
No, it's not going to be called Spoilers.
it will to Reese.
I don't think it really gives much to the what's going to happen in the episode, because it's called of St. John. Now, this is unofficial, because it's on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But they do say it's written by Stephen Moffat and directed by Colm McCarthy.
Ooh, is he new? Directing who? Is he new to directing who?
Sorry, I was trying to think of a joke then, but I couldn't think of one. I have no idea. I guess he probably is, yes. Paul McGarvey.
Yeah, I haven't heard of the name before.
Yes.
Well,
The Doctor Who official Twitter says Bells of St. John. So
yeah,
how can that?
And then it's got TBA, 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 and then an episode written by Stephen Thompson is entitled, and I think this has been let out because I'm really looking forward to this one because it reminds me of a first Doctor story called Edge of Destruction. It's called Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
They're spelling center properly.
Yeah, of course they are.
Well, so they don't know how to spell center here in the US.
Yeah, I know they don't have. Yeah, but this is obviously they've got to use the title of the episode, which would have been a British title, wouldn't it? So they would. This is Wikipedia is an American based thing, isn't it? Not institution. It's a facility. It's a facility. I think is the word.
What an institution, really?
Okay, and the second to last episode is entitled, and we seem to know this because I seem to remember a Neil Gaiman's episode.
Ice Warriors.
No.
No, it's not called the Ice Warriors.
It's called The Last Cyberman.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's more than one Cyberman in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the look of the Cyberman, though.
We can believe, apparently, reveal, sorry, that the writers are Stephen Moffat, Neil Cross, Mark Gatiss, Neil Cross, Stephen Thompson, Mark Gatiss, Neil Gaiman, Stephen Moffat.
Neil.
Yeah. I wish they'd you know, what I'm really looking forward to before I finish the show is one, a episode by Russell T. Davis, a new one, under the umbrella of Stephen Moffat. I really am looking forward to that because there won't be any of that being shackled to story arcs or you know, you can just write because he knows a fantastic writer, Russell T. Davis. As it has been proven, because I was listening to the Bigger on the Inside podcast where they just covered, what episode did they cover now? It was Partners in Crime, and they've been
reviewing it.
Yes, they reviewed it, and they have been sort of slating Russell T. Davis a little bit. But they started off by saying how brilliant that episode was, and saying it's probably his best piece of work to date, as in up to them. But they're saying a later episode in that series was better. But they're saying how brilliant that is, and that series 4 was the best. Yeah. And he was just getting the hang of Doctor Who. That's what they were saying.
Yeah.
And then he left.
Excellent.
So,
I completely disagree. I mean, it's a good episode, but he had a hang of Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, but that's what they were saying. That's what they're saying. But things were getting better. Things were getting better. And then we got the special.
Getting better all the time.
I used to get mad at my school. The teachers that taught me weren't cool. Sorry, a bit carried away there.
That one up.
Until next week, be quiet. Until next week, thank you for listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who Madcast. And goodbye.
KBO, keep buggering.
Damn!
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APB Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk, and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.